Well, so much continues to develop in the world of basketball. What I mean, with all the trades, the signings, the releases. I mean, of course, the big news today was the fact that Klay Thompson goes down again and will have season-ending surgery before the season even gets going. His 2020-2021 season is over before it even gets started. And what just rotten luck. The guy has an unfortunate injury in the finals against Toronto, goes down, makes a great comeback attempt to be ready for this season, and now once again has that ripped away from him. I mean, just a bummer. I mean, for Golden State getting ready to come back, you have Curry coming back, you had Thompson coming back, they drafted James Wiseman last night, and then literally the same day they draft James Wiseman, earlier on yesterday, was when it was first reported that he had been injured. Now, we didn't know to the extent, we didn't know if it was going to cost him his season, but that happened yesterday, earlier in the day. Then they draft James Wiseman, then it's determined that he's going to have season-ending surgery. And the Warriors now, just over a month to try to figure out how you're going to try to fill that hole of Klay Thompson not being there and see what you can do to keep yourself competitive in the West. But that is a massive curveball thrown Golden State's way. And we will talk more about the NBA draft and the action from last night here coming up in this segment. But also we'll talk Thursday night football a little later on in the show. We'll also talk Major League Soccer playoffs as those get started tomorrow with the first two games. And then not too early to start thinking about baseball season as ESPN has how they're going to cover opening day and opening week for Major League Baseball next season. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But let's get into the NBA draft. Essentially, the top three picks went as most mock drafts had them going. Anthony Edwards, number one overall, the shooting guard out of Georgia, going to Minnesota. And he had James Wiseman, the center out of Memphis, going number two overall to Golden State. Then LaMelo Ball, the point guard, going number three overall to Charlotte. So those first three picks, A, B, C, right along, right to the letter. And that's essentially how a lot of mock drafts had the NBA draft starting off, and there was no surprises, no curveballs there in the first three picks of the draft. What I did find interesting, though, and this was there you go. Not necessarily this is going to help with the Klay Thompson hole, but this is some NBA trade buzz that just came across the table. The Warriors are nearing a deal with the Thunder to acquire Kelly Oubre Jr. Of course, he was sent away from Phoenix during the whole Chris Paul trade, so now it looks as though he could be on his way. Could be on his way to Golden State. So we'll keep an eye on that. See if there's any other developments from that story here during this hour. See if that gets finalized, or if there's anything else that comes of it. But what I was gonna say was that the top 10 picks, those lottery picks, for the first time since 2000, kind of the blue blood schools, North Carolina, Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, no player from one of those four teams was drafted in the lottery positions this year. And that's pretty surprising. I mean, North Carolina didn't have, you know, as talented of a roster as we've seen them have in previous seasons. This past year, Cole Anthony really stood out when he was on the floor. But to think that Kansas, North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, to think that those four schools that are so prominent in the world of college basketball didn't have anyone go top 10, that's pretty unbelievable. And it's also pretty cool because I think that shows that there's, you know, when you watch college football, there's such huddles of talent. You know, I mean, you look at the SEC, look at the Big Ten. I mean, when you look at the difference between Power Five, even the Power Five has such differences in talent level and talent distribution. When you look at the top of some of those conferences and the bottom of some of those conferences, but you think about college football, you think about the non-Power Five teams, and maybe one or two a season kind of give you that Power Five feel when you watch them, how they dominate their fellow opponents in their conference, whatever it might be. There's a couple non-Power Five schools each season, I feel like, that give you a Power 5 feel to their program. When you look at basketball, though, I mean, that's what makes this such a fun sport at the collegiate level is that talent, I feel like, really gets dispersed. You have those blue bloods, but you also have schools that can make runs. You have those mid-major schools that can put on a show throughout the season and be a March Madness threat. So I think the fact that none of those blue blood schools saw a lottery pick this year means that it's really starting to, talent's really starting to get dispersed all over the college basketball world. They're not just going to Duke anymore or Kentucky anymore or not just going to these powerhouse schools. They're, it's a little more open. It's a little more freeing in that these kids are, or these young athletes are going to just kind of more of mid-major schools or schools that are in Power 5s but not considered those blue blood type schools. You know, they're going to a Maryland or a Michigan State or a Tennessee or something like that. Schools that still have very, very solid basketball programs, but they're not one of those blue blood type of schools. So I thought that was a pretty cool occurrence last night that the top 10 picks, none of them came from some of those, you know, blue blood esque schools that are in the college basketball world. But overall, I thought the whole draft last night, I'm getting more and more used to the virtual drafts. I think it would still be cool to have an audience there, but maybe it's just because we've seen so much of that now this year with pretty much everyone doing their drafts this way. But I kind of like it. I kind of just like having cameras on all the different kind of celebrations or watch parties. I kind of just like that feel. Of course, I'm probably saying that now in a couple of years when I go back to having drafts with crowds there and in, on these big stages. I'm sure, you know, I'm going to be saying the same thing about that. Oh, I'm so happy they're back in that setting. But this year, it's kind of been fun to see them having those watch parties, having their family or friends over and just watching every single pick celebrate that same way. Just kind of fun to have seen that this year. And fun watching the NBA draft last night. And looking at that top 10, Obi Toppin, that was a big moment for the Dayton Star to go to New York. There were some mock drafts that had him going fifth overall to Cleveland. They ended up going with Isaac Okoro from Auburn. But Obi Toppin going back home from New York goes to go home to play for the Knicks. And the Knicks as well look like they're gearing up for something. Because they cleared, I think it was $40 million in cap space by letting just a bunch of hard luck role players go from their roster, but they've cleared $40 million, and you got to imagine, now that they have two really kind of young stars in Obi Toppin and RJ Barrett, they could be looking to maybe add like a Harden or a Westbrook or maybe make a run for a Giannis. It looks like they're trying to get that space where they could bring in kind of a major star to be paired with these two young guns now in RJ Barrett and Obi Toppin. So, I mean, we've seen move after move after move, really. Literally this the whole last week, it feels like, in the NBA. And now that New York is kind of setting themselves up, it seems like they are preparing themselves to try to make some kind of move. Who knows if they're going to get it done. But the fact they got Obi Toppin last night, they cleared $40 million in cap space. It seems as though New York is getting ready to make a push for a big star. So that'll be fun to see how that plays out, too. Then if they manage to get someone big, if they do manage to bring in a Harden or a Westbrook, and you have that kind of player there with RJ Barrett and Obi Toppin, that'd be a fun Knicks team to watch. So interesting to see how that's going to play out down the line. But the Knicks, I mean, some positive feedback coming back on the Knicks night last night. And then the Phoenix Suns, they had that final lottery pick there at number 10, and most of the mock drafts that I saw, most of the talk that I heard was that it was Sadiq Bey that could be going to Phoenix there at the number 10 spot. Could have been Tyrese Halliburton. There were a lot of different names. Didn't see a whole lot of Jalen Smith come up when I was looking at mock drafts for the Phoenix Suns. And it's an interesting pick. I mean, obviously you have DeAndre Ayton there at your center. You have essentially Chris Paul and Devin Booker there as kind of your main backcourt duo. So I figured they were either go for a guard that could play behind those two or a forward, because that was the only thing that didn't really stand out with that team. And so they decided to go with a power forward. Jalen Smith out of Maryland, you know, a guy that, again, has got some length and can be kind of a three or four guy. He can play small. He can play power forward. So, you know, I like it in the sense that the one area in that starting five, those forward positions where there isn't really a standout talent right now. I like the fact they went for a young guy in that position, but I'm still a little worried when you don't have Devin Booker on the floor, when you don't have Chris Paul, when those two guys aren't on the floor together, who's really going to be backing them up now? You lost Rubio, you lost Kelly Oubre Jr., you lost two of those guys that you could put in to kind of give Devin Booker some help, who could have maybe complimented Paul or Booker if one of those wasn't on the court. And instead of going after a guard, because Tyrese Halliburton was still available, ended up going two picks later to Sacramento, a division rival for Phoenix. Well, maybe not necessarily. Well, yeah. That's also the thing about basketball, is that division standings don't ultimately matter. All five teams in a division could make the playoffs. And I don't really think of Phoenix and Sacramento as too much of a rivalry there. But either way, Tyrese Halliburton goes two picks later. Sadiq Bey goes a little later on in the first round, 19th overall to Brooklyn. But I just thought, I think it's a good pick for Phoenix. I think it addresses a spot they needed some help at that forward position. But when you give up on Halliburton, when you don't go for Sadiq Bey, I don't know. I feel like it's a good decision, but maybe it wasn't the best decision that Phoenix could have made. So we'll see. They let Frank Kaminsky go today as well. So that's kind of a forward slash center guy that is now no longer on that team as well. So that opens the door for a little more playing time, I think, for Jalen Smith. But still, good decision, but maybe not the best that Phoenix could have made. And you know what? I mean, ultimately, it was an entertaining first round. Again, I mentioned Cole Anthony of North Carolina. He went 15th overall to Orlando. And the 76ers, actually, with all the talk and all the kind of the analysis that goes into, post-draft and everything like that, looking forward to the future, stars that could make an impact. The Philadelphia 76ers, I think, did a good job of maneuvering their way through the draft last night. They got some good young talent. They were able to kind of clear some space with Al Horford's contract, sending him to Oklahoma City for Danny Green there. So I think Philadelphia did a good job last night. And now, of course, Daryl Morey taking over there in Philadelphia. It was going to be interesting to see what his initial impact would be on that team. I think he set them up nicely with a young squad. It's got some good all-around talent now. It's going to take some time for everyone to get on the same page. But ultimately, I think Philadelphia is looking pretty good right now in the Eastern Conference. Not saying they're going to be this, top-of-the-list contender, but just with holding their own, with being a team that can fight and get wins this season, I have that kind of feeling from Philadelphia after last night. So that's one of the teams that stood out. Again, I think Sacramento had a pretty good draft as well last night. Speaking of the Los Angeles Clippers, I think they did a nice job last night as well. So ultimately, I thought it was a pretty well thought out draft from most teams. Detroit Pistons made some interesting selections last night. Not sure, really what they were seeing in some of their picks. Throughout last night, they had Killian Hayes out of France as a point guard. Again, you think of that team, you think of Blake Griffin down low, you kind of missing some guard action there. So I liked that that pick from Detroit. But then you look at some of the other picks that they had in that draft last night. If I can just pull my notes up here, because Detroit, it's a team that, again, has been struggling to kind of find their way back in the Eastern Conference. And I feel like, you have that kind of underneath presence. So if you can get some backcourt help, and again, Killian Hayes out of France, and I was surprised they didn't try to make any other moves for some other backcourt help there, because that was their only pick. I thought they had a second round pick, but I was mistaken. So Killian Hayes, the only pick for Detroit in that draft last night. So I thought the point guard was a solid pick, but I felt like they could have maybe been a little more active in trying to get some more help for that backcourt. Detroit's only pick was Killian Hayes. So, again, it addresses some kind of flaw, but as teams that maybe could have done a little bit more, I think Detroit was in that area. But, again, I think that It was an entertaining draft, again, of being a draft that was virtually held. I thought it was really – it was conducted in a nice way. They had Malika Andrews right there getting ready for interviews. Everyone was pretty much on the mic almost as soon as they got drafted to give their response. I mean, it was a really fun evening to watch the NBA draft. And it's just been – I mean, it's just been different this year, but I think the NFL, the NBA, everyone that's done their drafts this way has done a really good job with it. So hats off to the NBA and getting that draft in the books. And I can't wait to see now where all these – how all these young guys – I mean, they have – a little over a month. That's it. We're a month and essentially 3 days away from the start of the 2020-2021 season in the NBA. So it'll be interesting to see who can really adjust to their new teams and get themselves mentally, physically ready enough for that season opener, for their season opener as they happen here in late December. But fun draft last night. Enjoyed watching it and can't wait to see where these players kind of elevate their teams to and how this draft class performs in their first season. Should be a lot of fun. And what should be a lot of fun as well tonight, week 11 of the NFL season kicks off with a monumental NFC West matchup between the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. We will talk about that coming up after the break on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Week 11 gets underway tonight in the 2020 NFL season as we have a huge NFC West clash. I mean, Arizona right now, record-wise, is right there with the LA Rams and the Seattle Seahawks at 6-3. But tiebreakers give Arizona the divisional lead right now with the Rams in second, Seattle in third. And if Arizona is to win this game, they give themselves a little bit of breathing room from Seattle. Not a ton, obviously, just one game. But that would mean that Arizona also would sweep Seattle this season should they get the win tonight, because they played a few weeks ago at the end of October, and that was the game in the desert where Arizona came back to win it in overtime, 37-34. And what a game that was. Seattle had a 10-7 lead at the end of the first. They then have a 27-17 lead at halftime. Just one touchdown from Arizona late in the third quarter, and it's 27-24 going to the fourth. Seattle then, Tyler Lockett catches that 3-yard pass from Russell Wilson, makes it a 10-point Seahawk lead, 34-24, with 6 minutes and 44 seconds left on the clock. And then Arizona comes back and ties it up at 34 in the last few possessions. And then Arizona goes on to win it in overtime, 37-34. With 15 seconds left, he kicked that game-winning field goal. I mean, that's the kind of matchups and really the level of competition we've seen in the NFC West this year. I mean, San Francisco now losing contact there with the other three, but still, those three teams at the top, LA, Arizona, and Seattle, have all played like playoff teams this year. Obviously, we'll see one of them in there. I wouldn't doubt that we see possibly all three of those teams in the playoffs. But Seattle's defense is going to have to get a lot better. And that's the thing, is that both offenses are top five offenses. Arizona ranked as the first overall offense in the NFL right now. Seattle at the fifth best offense in the NFL right now. Defense is where it really starts to take a turn. Arizona at 16, the 16th ranked defense in the NFL. Seattle, dead last, 32nd in the NFL. And I feel like Seattle's best chance to beat Arizona was that first game. Because whatever their defense was in the first part of the season, it has gone straight downhill. And their offense, even though they're still ranked as fifth in the NFL, has not had that kind of a feel the last few games. So for Seattle to now try to turn that around against a team in Arizona that seems to be rolling, I mean, this is an Arizona Cardinals team that just sees Kyler Murray continuing to get more and more comfortable, more and more explosive. He has that kind of Lamar Jackson feel from last season, when every time Baltimore had the ball and every time that ball was snapped and it was in Lamar Jackson's hands, you felt like they were moments away from a touchdown. It feels like that this year now when Kyler Murray has the ball in his hand, because he's got a heck of an arm. Look at the Hail Mary throw he had last week. He was running on the run, and then had to kind of, I mean, he didn't throw across his body, but he had to essentially kind of, you know, arch his shoulder back around to try to just get a solid throw on it, and didn't even look like that great of a throw, and he still managed to throw it almost half the field into the end zone. So he's got an incredibly strong arm, accurate arm as well, and the speed that we've seen from him this year. We knew he was fast, but you look back at that Dallas game, and he is turning the corner on linebackers that seem to have an angle on him. Literally, as you're watching the play unfold, you think, oh, okay, he's going to get 3, maybe 4 yards. Then all of a sudden, he turns the corner, and the next 3, 4 steps, he just separates from everybody. So I feel like Seattle's best chance to beat Arizona was the first meeting. And I know that this game is in Seattle, but it's not going to be a packed house. You don't have that same kind of intense home environment there in Seattle this year. So I think the fact that Arizona knows they can beat this team, they came back from a 10-point deficit in the last few minutes of the game the first time they played to beat this team, and now they're on a roll. Arizona is 4-1 in their last 5 games. Again, not necessarily the cream of the crop. They beat the Jets 30-10. They had the beatdown on Dallas 38-10. Then the comeback win against Seattle 37-34 in overtime. Then they lost the tough matchup there with Miami 34-31. Another game decided by a late kick. And then Buffalo, you know, the fight they had against Buffalo last weekend. And then, of course, having the Hail Mary for the win. So Arizona in their last 5 games, I feel like, you know, you can, as I just said, not playing the cream of the crop of the NFL, but they're doing what they should be doing to those teams, which is blowing them out. If the Jets or the Dallas Cowboys game is one possession or maybe even 10 points or in that range, you think, is this Arizona team really that good? But the fact they blew both those teams off the field, they had a comeback win against what is still a good Seattle team. They're not the same kind of great Seahawks teams that we've seen in the past when they've had Russell Wilson, just because that defense just isn't there. And offensively, they have good weapons with Lockett and DK Metcalf, obviously Russell Wilson. But that running game is suffering. So they're a little bit, not totally one-dimensional, but when you're quarterback's your leading rusher, that's not an awful thing, but it's also not the best look for your run game if you don't have a whole lot of running backs that are putting up numbers. And of course, injuries have ravaged the Seahawks running back core this year. But with the way that Arizona has played these last 5 games, and really all season, to be 6-3 on the year and be in first place in the NFC West, it's not luck. It doesn't have the same kind of feeling as, let's say, the Chicago Bears did earlier on in the season, when you think it could be skill, but now it's looking like maybe it's a little more luck in the beginning of the season. Arizona is 6-3 because they are that good this year. And with the way that their first half of the season has gone, I mean, start of the year, I would have been surprised if someone said, yeah, I think Arizona's going to win the NFC West. Right now, I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona is up towards the top of the NFC. Because this defense for Arizona can make stops. They can step up. And I think that's what's going to be the difference tonight. I'm expecting an offensive fire show there in Seattle. Kind of like what it was like in the first game. If you look at those stats in the first game, I mean, Russell Wilson had 50 pass attempts. He went 33 of 50, 388 yards, 3 touchdowns, but here's the thing, 3 interceptions. Those are the plays that Cardinals defensive players have been making that Seattle's just been missing this season. Although they did pick off Kyler Murray one time there in the first meeting in the desert, I just feel like recently that defense, I mean, obviously the overall quality of the defense is not where it's been, but just those little plays they were able to squeak out in the first half of the season, I feel like all that's gone. So they are a step behind, they're a step slow, they're just not as talented as they've been. So the fact that defense hasn't been getting any better, I mean, it was better at the start of the year than it is now, and that's not great for Seattle. As a lot of these teams, I mean, the Cardinals, the Rams, they are finding some offensive groove, and Seattle, it's not like their defense is the only thing that's really kind of wrong with them right now. I mean, you look at Russell Wilson, and he has 10 giveaways since week 7. That's most in the NFL over the last few weeks. I mean, he went from having a majority of the MVP buzz around him to now pretty much no buzz around him. That's been kind of the turn for Russell Wilson. It feels like that's been kind of the turn of the whole Seahawks season. It was okay at the start. Your defense made some plays here and there, but Russell Wilson, that offense was lighting people up. Now all of a sudden your defense is getting worse and your offense is going down the hill as well. Not a great look for a team that has just 7 games left in their season. And again, Arizona feels like they're going the other way. I feel like their offense is just getting more and more confidence. Their defense is able to make some big plays. Again, they're not the best defense in the NFL, but they were able to hold off Seattle in the last few minutes of their first game. That gave their offense a chance to come back and tie the game up and win it in overtime. Their defense also made some great plays in that overtime period. So looking at these two teams, I mean, I was feeling Arizona on Monday when I was talking about this. I did a little preview towards week 11. And today as I sit here, I still feel like Arizona is better than Seattle this year. And I think Arizona gets the win tonight on Thursday Night Football. Because both these teams are coming off short weeks. They both played in the afternoon session this past Sunday in Week 10. So they're both coming off a short week. Seattle from L.A. right back up to Seattle. And Arizona was in the desert. You know, it's not a long road trip for either team. So the fact they're both coming off short weeks, I feel like that even, favors Arizona more. Because they have the mental edge of knowing that this team had a 10-point lead on them with under 5 minutes to go the first time they came back and erased that. So now that you have that confidence and you're not having to think about the away fans there in Seattle, because home field advantage just hasn't meant the same thing as it has in recent years this year. And that's not surprising, as there's little to no fans in the stands during most of these games. So, I mean, if this is in Seattle with the roaring crowd there that they have at CenturyLink Field and the Seahawks are trying to even, split the season series with Arizona this year, I would say, hey, you know what? Seattle with that home crowd could possibly edge out Arizona. I still think it would be close, though. I still think it would be close between these two teams, just because Arizona, and maybe I'm getting a little too overhyped on the Cardinals, and that's a possibility, but I just feel like this team is figuring it out. They're getting more and more confidence, and if Kyler Murray stays healthy, if DeAndre Hopkins stays healthy, that is a deadly duo in the NFC West and the NFL, period. So I'm looking forward to that. And speaking of DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, this should be a fun wide receiver matchup as well tonight with DeAndre Hopkins and DK Metcalf, who has had a fantastic season of his own. And looking at the way these two have operated so far this year, DeAndre Hopkins getting about one more target and two more catches on average a game. But they're right around the same kind of receiving yards. DeAndre Hopkins at 95, DK Metcalf at 90. And then DK Metcalf actually has double the amount of touchdowns that Hopkins does this year. Metcalf has 8, Hopkins just 4. So, he's been a weapon for Seattle, and they've needed some. You can't just rely on Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson to get the job done. So the fact they have a big receiver in DK Metcalf has been a huge help for them. So they're going to need a big night out of him, a big night out of Tyler Lockett as well. But really what it's going to come down to is, can Seattle's defense come up with more stops than Arizona's defense? That's what it's going to be. And I don't think Seattle has that in them tonight. So I'm going with Arizona. I think they get the win on the road. They sweep Seattle, which, again, didn't think I'd be saying that about Arizona this year, but I am saying it. And, I think it's going to be a fun game. I'm expecting a shootout between the two teams. I think it could very well, like the first game, go to overtime and need to be settled there. But definitely looking forward to the Thursday night matchup tonight. And essentially, the NFC West, most of the divisions I feel like are going to be fun to watch down the stretch. But the way those three teams in Arizona, LA, and Seattle have just been putting on a show in the NFC West. What I'm also going to be interested to see is if Seattle does lose this game, they go to 6-4. Let's say the Rams get the victory this week. Are they playing this week? I can't keep track anymore of who's on a bye and who's not, because it keeps going around. Let me just check the scoreboard just to make sure I don't sound like a complete idiot when I say this. Rams, Rams, Rams. There they go. Monday Night Football, they're playing the Buccaneers. So If Arizona gets this win, they could very well see Seattle and L.A. both. I mean, Seattle obviously would lose if Arizona wins. So if L.A. loses, that then puts Arizona right there all alone at the top. And then it could be an interesting scenario of watching Los Angeles and watching Seattle try to keep pace with Arizona down the stretch. And that would be a lot of fun to watch, I think, in the NFC West and watch that battle just continue to unfold. So it should be a fun week of the NFL. Again, I don't know if it's because we just don't know if we're going to get the whole season in, how games – I mean, I think kind of the unknown, but it feels like every week of the NFL season this year has just been nonstop entertainment and fun. Been a little sketchy, too, obviously, hoping that everyone stays relatively healthy and relatively safe and we can get the whole season in. But, it's just felt – a lot more exciting this year, which is awesome. But looking forward to Thursday Night Football tonight. Going with Arizona. That's the first pick of the week. And, I'm getting back into it with Thursday Night Football. I was struggling a little bit there, but I'm back to a winning record of 5-4. So hopefully I can get to 6-4 tonight on Thursday Night Football. But starting off with Arizona, that's the first pick. We'll see how the game goes tonight. Really looking forward to it. And, yeah, can't wait. Looking forward to it. Picking the Cardinals. When we come back, Major League Soccer playoffs begin tomorrow. So we will look at, again, matchups and who are the favorites to bring home the MLS Cup this year. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. The MLS Cup playoffs kick off tomorrow with the two play-in games from the Eastern Conference. Nashville taking on Inter Miami. That'll be fun to see the two newcomers essentially match up there the play-in round matchups there in the Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference had 10 teams advancing into the playoffs this year with two play-in games, and the Western Conference just 8. So the most teams that Major League Soccer will ever welcome or has ever welcomed into their playoffs, 18 teams. Getting a chance to raise the cup this year, which is, I mean, talk about a majority of your teams getting in. I think there's 26 teams in Major League Soccer, so all but 8 teams competing for a championship this year. But Nashville and Inter Miami, that's one play-in game. The other, New England taking on Montreal. Those two games are tomorrow. And it should be interesting because, when it gets to the playoffs, especially now that it's expanded, I think depth is going to be tested a lot more. And when you think about who has depth and how, who that helps and who it hurts, really the top two teams in each conference are some of the teams set up better with their depth. I mean, the Philadelphia Union, majorly balanced, a lot of depth, at least 5-6 players that could put pressure on a defense, pressure on a goalkeeper, and have the ability to score. And you look at Sporting Kansas City as well, who one of the hottest teams coming into the playoffs, balanced 6-1-1 in their past 8 games. The health of Alan Pulido, a little bit of a question mark around Kansas City, but for the most part, they have some good depth and balance as well. As does Toronto FC, again, somebody that, and Seattle. Both of those teams as well, contenders with balance, with depth. And the thing that Toronto and Seattle have is some big-time championship pedigree. They've met each other in 3 of the last 4 MLS Cup finals. So these are two teams that not only know playoffs well, know the final well, and knows what it takes to get there. So you take that experience and you add in the fact that they are full of talent and nicely balanced. I mean, you would imagine the top two teams already have the best chance to win the championship, but I mean, the top two teams in each of these conferences really do look like they're set up the best to make the run through these playoffs and hoist the MLS Cup. So like, that'll be interesting. And then you look at some of the teams that have depth on one side, but not so much the other. You think about the Portland Timbers, who have a great attack. LAFC, who has a really solid attack as well. But their defense has been really inconsistent. And with the way that single elimination playoffs go, if you have a day where your back line just isn't with it, you let a few balls get through, you put your goalkeeper in a tough position, just like that, your season could be over. So I think you look at those two teams and think that if they can keep themselves just alert, keep your back line, you know, have your back line as alert as possible. And I think, you know, kind of maybe taking a page out of Reno's book, having that back line maybe be a little aggressive could help them be a little more alert. You don't want them to be too far up and give an easy ball over the top and just lose a straight sprint to the goal. But if you have them up, if you have them a little more involved, it could keep them a little more alert. I think that could help teams like Portland or LA that has a great attack, but their defense just has been too inconsistent this year to really be able to keep them as balanced as some of these other top contenders. But, I mean, this is a talented group of teams. And you look at, again, Nashville and Miami as teams that are making their first playoff appearances. Or Orlando City as well, making their first postseason appearance. And this has been a team that has had some really good talent on their team in the past. They still have some good talent there now. So this could be a fun team to watch just in terms of, you know, you get a young team or a team that's in the playoffs for the first time, that eagerness just to show that they can compete with these teams, sometimes make them just as dangerous as legit contenders like a Philadelphia or like a Seattle. So can't wait to see what Orlando City does in these in their first playoff appearance. I think they're going to be a fun team to watch when all is said and done. And they get to play New York City FC on Saturday in an MLS playoff matchup. And New York City FC as well, a team that you could see winning it all. It's not crazy to think that they could do it. But again, a little bit of you know, you think about the balance some of these other top contenders have, just missing that a little bit because they were pretty sharp throughout the entire season, throughout the first two-thirds of the season in terms of being offensively and defensively balanced. When you look at the last few kind of games, the last stretch of their season, especially decision day, that defense gave up some pretty easy looks. And for a back line, for a defense that was not the best in Major League Soccer, but they were stout at times, they were focused, they were organized. And in the last stretch of that season, there were just games where and moments where they just seemed to be stuck. They were late reacting to a pass, they were late reacting to someone dribbling into the box. It was just it seemed as though they were just kind of falling asleep at times on defense. Towards the end of the season on decision day as well, had a tough go of slowing down the Chicago Fire offense, which shouldn't have been a team that gave them that much of a problem on that day. But I think this is a talented playoff field, and the fact that we're getting more playoff teams as well, because I think, you know, single elimination puts a lot of pressure on everybody. It puts a lot of pressure on the depth of a team, on the starters of a team as well. But expanding the field, I mean, we saw that with Major League Baseball. We saw that with the National Hockey League. Putting in more teams to your playoffs. I mean, this year, you look at the NHL playoffs, both 12 seeds advanced. Think about that. Two teams that wouldn't have even been close to the playoffs had it been a normal regular season that would have had its regular playoffs. Those two 12 seeds, I forget who it was in the West. I feel like it was Chicago. But it was Montreal in the East. And they both managed to win their opening round best of five game and get into the next round. So expanding these playoffs this year, we've seen some teams that wouldn't have been close to the playoffs putting on great performances in that situation, and I'm kind of looking forward to that this year. I think expanding the Major League Soccer playoffs is going to give teams, you know, just that confidence of having playoff talent, of being a playoff caliber team, and when you can carry that into, I mean, like Orlando or Nashville or Miami, when you can carry that into, especially think about a team like Miami, who, I mean, you have the star power of David Beckham there in the box watching pretty much every game that you have. And the start of their season, pretty dull, pretty bleak. And yet this team started really turning around, some solid play from the attackers. Their back line ended up becoming pretty solid in Major League Soccer as well. So looking forward to some of these teams like Miami, like Nashville, like Orlando City that are making their first playoff appearance, and just wanting to see how they approach it. You know, a lot of good talent on these teams. Do they try to be aggressive early? Do they wait for their chances and kind of sit back in the first half? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how those different teams approach their first playoff matchups, especially with that Miami-Nashville matchup. Because not only are these two teams new to the playoffs, they were new to Major League Soccer this year. So they've had to adjust in a season unlike any other to their first year of Major League Soccer. And now in their first year, they're both in the playoffs, and one of them is going to get the chance to go on and play Philadelphia or Toronto, but play one of the top two seeds in the Eastern Conference there in what is the official kind of first round of the Major League Soccer playoffs. That's a huge opportunity for any team that is that new to a major sporting league. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And of course, Major League Soccer also announced that, hey, if you have a COVID outbreak, if you're unable to play your game, there is no rescheduling. You will most likely have to forfeit that game. And I like that. Because, you know, in the regular season, maybe there's a little bit of wiggle room. And you know, if someone has a brain fart and turns out to be a little reckless one night, it doesn't completely throw you off. But when it comes to the playoffs, yeah, you better be smart. And really, if you can't stay focused at this point, if you can't stay focused for the next month or so and try to win an MLS Cup title, then you don't deserve it. If you have an outbreak right now because someone couldn't stay focused on a championship, you don't deserve to play for that championship. And honestly, I feel like that's the same way with any sport this year. If you can't stay focused on the job you're getting paid to do, then don't be there. Either send them home, or if they are dumb enough to infect the whole team, then yeah, you know, that's kind of on you. So I like the fact that Major League Soccer is saying, hey, we're not going to reschedule playoff games. Be smart, understand you're now playing for a championship, and be there, be healthy, be ready for each game. So hats off to Major League Soccer for taking that stance. I think it's the right way to go. And should, again, just be, I hope that you're looking forward to these playoffs as much as I am. If you're not, I mean, I'm not a huge Major League Soccer fan during the season. I watch games, I follow stats, I follow standings, but there is that intensity around single elimination playoff games. And I love the fact that Major League Soccer has gone to single elimination. I didn't mind the two-leg structure, but I've said this before. The away goals rule just kind of irritates me as a sports fan. I just want to see it come down to on-field, but not worry about, you know, some little side rule like away goals to act as a tiebreaker. It comes down to each game having to be better, finish it off, whether it's in regulation, in extra time, in a shootout, and that's what the playoffs should be. So I think Major League Soccer switching to this single elimination format, as they have now, it's not like they're doing it for this season. It's already been in place. But I feel like that switch, when they made it, was a great decision for Major League Soccer to draw in some more viewers to their playoffs. So looking forward to watching those Major League Soccer playoffs play out, which, again, start tomorrow with the first two games. And it's not too early to be thinking about next year's baseball season. And ESPN has already kind of let us know how they will cover the first opening week of the Major League Baseball season next year. So we'll give you a little heads up on that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Well, if you're already missing baseball, don't worry, because ESPN wants to get you pumped up for next year's baseball season. They have released their schedule for the opening week of baseball for the 2021 season, and it's a doozy, and I mean that in the best way. Because essentially they will cover 11 season opening games, which involve 19 teams over the first week of the 2021 MLB season. It kicks off April 1st, which I kind of hope they pull an April Fool's Day prank, but they're not going to. We're not supposed to do that. But it kicks off April 1st with the Toronto Blue Jays going to the New York Yankees, and they have the Dodgers starting their championship defense on the road, which I feel like most of the time, champions get to open up their season at home. But the Dodgers being put on the road to take on the Rockies. And the Mets, under their new owner, Steve Cohen, will travel to take on NL East rivals, the Washington Nationals. And then the first day is capped off with an AL West rivalry between the Houston Astros on the road against the Oakland Athletics. Then April 4th is MVP Day, as it starts with the National League MVP Freddie Freeman and the Atlanta Braves going on the road to take on NL East rivals the Philadelphia Phillies. And then they have the debut of the 32nd season of ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. And I gotta tell you, when you don't have Sunday Night Football on TV, Sunday Night Baseball, probably the next best thing. Just because it's usually great matchups, usually exciting games, great commentary team there for the games. So looking forward to that, and that'll have the American League MVP, Jose Abreu, and the Chicago White Sox going up against a three-time MVP in Mike Trout and the LA Angels. So that should be a fun day as well. And then it doesn't stop. The following day after that, which would be April 5th, Alex Cora, who is back in action now on the bench for the Boston Red Sox, take the Red Sox to take on the AL champion Tampa Bay Rays as a part of another four-game broadcast day on ESPN. And then the 11th and final game of ESPN's week-long season opening coverage will be capped off with the Mets visiting the Phillies on a Tuesday. And our pal Saxman Rick here at the station is a big New York fan, and he was pretty pumped with Steve Cohen taking over the Mets, some of the moves that he's made. So we'll see how the Mets look this year, even though they lost Abreu, or not Abreu, I'm spacing on his name. Gosh, dang it. Cano, I think, is who they lost there for the season. Suspended, which is not good. But either way, should be fun to see the MLB season open up next year on ESPN. It's a heck of a slate for the first week of the season, so can't wait for that. Can't wait for Thursday Night Football tonight as well. Should be a fun game between Arizona and Seattle. Be back on the air tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We'll have our pals Terry, Sax, and Rick will join us tomorrow. We'll talk Formula One, Thursday Night Football, the NBA, all some great stuff. So we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Enjoy the game. Peace.